Your advisement.
The ultimate.
Yes, and we will proceed to the last case of this morning, United States against Clark and Cruz in Olakes. And the sequel, Ms. Christensen.
May it please the court, counsel. This morning I'm arguing on behalf of both Mr. Clark and Mr. Cruz. Our brief was jointly filed. We have very similar issues, or a very similar issue, as does the third co-defendant, although his has a twist, so he's going to be arguing for himself after I'm done. This case involves a vast conspiracy with the Latin King organization in Chicago. These are three of the many defendants that were charged in this case, and these defendants are different in most respects because they did not cooperate with the government, did not enter into a plea agreement, and were only involved for a very short amount of time in a five-year conspiracy. The charged conspiracy ran from 1998 till 2003. Mr. Clark, in particular, was incarcerated for most of that time, and no one testified or provided any evidence that he was involved beyond perhaps February of 2001 until June of 2001, perhaps July.
But I have to say, given the scope of this conspiracy, with respect to both Mr. Clark and Mr. Cruz, it really wouldn't take long selling a half an ounce, you know, call it 14 grams a day, to hit that 1.5 kilogram level. Less than 4 months. I mean, even if one person were doing it, and as conspirators, at least for that period of time, I understand you to concede that they were quite aware that there were others out there. It was reasonably foreseeable to them that others would also be selling the cocaine. So even on your very narrow time frame, it seems to me that there was ample evidence from which the district court could have concluded this amount was met.
I would agree there was an awful lot of crack cocaine involved in this case. And
even from the time you concede that each of the two of them joined the, even if we assume that they only joined the conspiracy as late as you say, just going back to jail doesn't withdraw you from a conspiracy, sad to say. There's way too much.
Correct. Although there is absolutely no evidence that he was involved when he was jailed in the conspiracy.
But it's up to him to show that he withdrew.
True. I don't believe that actually came up in the district court, whether he withdrew or not. Everyone seems to concede that once he was in prison, he was not involved, at least in the conspiracy as it was presented in this case. I think while there was a very active drug conspiracy in this case and an incredible amount of drugs involved, you have to look, as the district court said she was doing, at the other defendants' plea agreements and what they admitted to. And other defendants who were involved for some of them the entire conspiracy admitted to a kilo and a half of crack cocaine. And that doesn't square with Mr. Clark's situation of being only involved for a couple of months or up to 5 months and also being held accountable for the same amount of crack cocaine. In fact, there was one defendant, Edward Mendez, who admitted he was involved for the full five-year conspiracy, and he was only held accountable for 500 grams to 1.5 kilograms, which is incredible if you consider what just Mr. Clark was held accountable for his short amount of time. And, of course, we recognize that these are cooperation agreements, they're plea agreements with the government, but this is what the government has put forward as evidence that Mr. Clark was involved with just as much or more as the co-defendants. No one else who was involved in the same time period admitted or was held accountable for the same amount of drugs as Mr. Clark or Mr. Cruz. And that's amply evident in both the proffers and the plea agreements the government has submitted.
But, of course, Mr. Clark was in charge, right? He was the Inca?
He was the Inca for that amount of time. And Mr. Cruz was, and I'm going to say this wrong probably, the cacique, which is the second in command.
Right, and you have about a minute left.
Lights are different. I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal to give my co-counsel an opportunity.
May it please the court, and good morning. I'm Norm Singleton. I'm appearing for Jose D. Olake. This case was basically my rocket ship ride to post-Booker federal sentencing, and it seems like in many respects things stayed very much the same. Specifically, in this case, that if the calculation of a guideline sentence depends on the resolution of a factual dispute, judge must resolve it by making findings on the basis of evidence. There are two basic factual disputes here: drug amount, drug type. But there's really no evidence in the record to resolve these disputes.
Well, wasn't Judge St. Eve entitled to rely on Mr. Olake's sworn statements?
And that is exactly the central point here. Not to shotgun this, but she specifically relied on his statement at the initial change of plea hearing. At the conclusion of the government's lengthy proffer, do you disagree with that, sir? And his answer was, no, I don't. You fast forward 10 months to the second change of plea, and at this point the judge knows that Mr. Olake suffers from mental retardation. That's in the record. And so she asks a more specific inquiry as to the drug amounts. Do you admit to your involvement in over 500 grams of crack cocaine? Answer, no. It's as if I asked somebody, do you agree with A through Z? And they said yes. And then I follow up and say, well, what about Q? And they say no. Haven't I just taken all the force and effect out of the answer to my earlier question? We also have to look at...
Well, it really depends. I mean, as I understood Judge St. Eve's response later on, when you had this discussion with her, she said, look, you know, I put him under oath. I warned him about perjury. People do change their statements sometimes in criminal sentencing, and I think she was satisfied that he had enough capability to understand that he told the truth the first time.
I think that there's no objections to his competency to proceed in this case. I just think that, you know, a court's colloquy should be tailored to some extent to the individual defendant if limitations are known. But I think that what Mr. Walters was trying to say about how, respectfully, Mr. Walters didn't phrase it very well, but I think that basically he was saying that this statement was given as in response to and as part of an agreement that was later voided and the plea vacated at the government's request. And this, when I was looking at the materials last night, I was just kind of wishing that I had sharpened up that issue a little bit, because I have not been able to find any case that has analogous facts in which a defendant's admission given in response as part of a plea agreement, later voided and the plea vacated at the government's request, what effect does that continue to have? Well, as I pointed out in my brief, I don't think it evaporates. But I think that you have to give, perhaps more weight should be given to subsequent remarks.
Gets a little thinner. It doesn't evaporate, but it gets a little mistier, huh?
Well, that's kind of my point, Judge.
I figured that one.
I wish, it seems like a question of first impression to me, and I just wish that I had sharpened it up a little bit.
Well, so I don't know what you could do to sharpen it up. I mean, she either takes one or the other, that's all.
Well, that's
nothing
that's,
in
that's
between.
Basically true.
Yeah.
But we get into Mr. Olake's, his period of involvement was even shorter than Mr. Clark's. It seems like in the record on the trial court, it was undisputed that he was in for 90 days. Wasn't a supervisory participant, but yet he still got the same amount, credited with the same amount of drugs as...
Well, he got the 500 to 1.5. It's one level down. If you want to save any rebuttal time...
I should save a little, Judge. Thank you.
Ms. Hayes?
May it please the Court. My name is Valerie Hayes, and I represent the United States in this case, the appellee. Appellant's counsel raised several arguments, none of which justify vacating the sentences of Leonard Clark, Juan Cruz, or Jose Olaquez. I first want to address the drug amount attributable to Clark and Cruz. The district court properly found that they were both responsible for over 1.5 kilograms of crack cocaine during the time that they were involved in the conspiracy. The district court heard at least four co-defendants admit to selling crack cocaine on a daily basis with Clark and Cruz between February and July 2001. The evidence was clear that during that time period, Clark and Cruz were the first and second in command, respectively, of the gang during that time period, and they were holding weekly meetings to discuss drug sales and security, and they were collecting dues during these meetings. In terms of evidence of specific drug amounts, three co-defendants each admitted that they possessed with intent to distribute over 1.5 kilograms of crack during the time that Clark and Cruz were in the conspiracy. I think Clark's counsel said that there was no one else that admitted to that exact same amount of crack during the exact same time period, and there were three co-defendants, and they were Serrano, Enriquez, and Martinez. Furthermore, Defendant Cruz admitted himself in an interview with the government that he alone possessed between 800 grams and 1 kilogram of crack cocaine when he was second in command of the gang. That doesn't even take into account the other eight co-defendants and what they possessed and were responsible for. The district court further heard co-defendant Enrique's admission that he and co-defendant Serrano were selling approximately 2 ounces of crack cocaine per week during the time that Clark and Cruz were in command. So in less than 5 months, that's an additional kilo of crack cocaine attributable to Clark and Cruz.
Didn't somebody else testify that from a quarter ounce up to an ounce a week? Because I was multiplying out, a quarter ounce a day for 4 months wouldn't get you up to a kilo, but a half would.
That's a different person.
Did the government ever line up, you know, so-and-so said they were selling this much, somebody else said they were selling that much, and all of those different people's sales were reasonably foreseeable to these defendants?
I think the government, through its submissions, they attached the cooperators' statements, past statements. I don't think there was ever a chart prepared or anything like that, but going through and looking at each person's statements and what they said about amounts, I think you can reach that conclusion. Clark argues that he was not in the conspiracy as long as some of the other co-conspirators, and therefore he should not be held liable for the same amount of crack. This argument fails because the over 1.5 kilograms was the highest guideline category, and they all pled to over 1.5 kilos. And during the time that he was in the conspiracy, the evidence showed that over 1.5 was attributable to him. I want to move on now and discuss the drug amount attributable to Olaquez, which the district court properly found was between 500 grams and 1.5 kilos of crack. As you heard, Defendant Olaquez admitted himself during his first change of plea hearing that he was between February and July of 2001, that specific time period, he was responsible for between 500 grams and 1.5 kilos.
It sounds to me like Mr. Singleton is arguing, in a sense, that statements made in the course of a plea hearing when the plea is eventually, when that eventually gets thrown out, or kind of like settlement discussions or something, they get erased and they aren't out there. Are you familiar with any rules about how such statements in plea agreements like this ought to be treated?
Well, there's a rule of evidence 410 that refers to that, and then there's a rule 11 of Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure. I don't believe opposing counsel ever raised, my understanding of their arguments was that the original statements weren't as reliable, not that they were barred from, that the district court was barred from using that. I think that's a different argument, and it was never presented to the district court. She never had the opportunity to look into that. But, you know, in general, the rules of evidence don't apply to sentencing hearings, so the Rule 410 itself would not be applicable. Only after the government moved to vacate his original plea did he, because of his failure to comply with the cooperation terms, only then did he change his story about and dispute the amount of drugs attributable to him. The district court reasonably relied upon his first admission that was under oath. Additionally, four of his co-defendants admitted to selling crack cocaine with him on a daily basis between, again, February and July of 2001. And based on the amount of crack cocaine that these co-defendants admittedly were selling on a weekly basis during this time period, the district court was correct in finding him responsible for between 500 and 1.5 kilograms. Furthermore, Enriquez admitted that he and Serrano, again, were selling 2 ounces per week, and that Olaquez was with them during that time period out there on the streets selling with them. So even with Enriquez and Serrano, Even if we're going to go with the 90-day time period that Olaquez is now claiming, you're up to 700 grams in a 90-day period just with those two, not including what Olaquez himself was selling or the others that were out with him. Finally, I want to turn to discussing the argument that only Olaquez raises, namely whether there was sufficient evidence to find that the drug at issue was crack cocaine. As your honors know, crack is a street term, so identifying cocaine base as crack does not take a scientific determination. It's a conclusion that can easily be drawn by anyone who's familiar with this type of drug. The district court heard the testimony and read the statements of all of the co-defendants, all of whom admitted that it was crack cocaine, and they described it as a rock-like substance. Furthermore, again, defendant Olaquez admitted under oath at both of his change of plea hearings, the first and second, that the drug at issue was crack cocaine. And he specifically said he didn't disagree with anything other than the drug amount at the second change of plea hearing. Accordingly, the district court properly sentenced Olaquez based on the guidelines for crack. The government respectfully requests this court affirm the judgment below. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Christensen?
May it please the court. Funny enough, I actually have made a chart. Of course, it's not in the evidence, but it is very helpful in a very complex case. My chart says that David Saez is the only individual who's only involved the same amount of time as Mr. Clark. David Saez. Angel Serrano admitted February to July of 2001, but another cooperating defendant, Jonathan Enriquez, said he sold with Angel Serrano from September 2001 until July of 2001, which considerably extends his time. The other three, Jonathan Enriquez, Edward Mendez, and Eric Martinez, all testified that they sold with Clark from February 2001 until July of 2001, but they began selling crack when they entered the gang in 1998 and sold continuously from that time. So that is the chart summary of what the government's evidence shows, and I would respectfully request this court remand for resentencing.
Thank you. Mr. Singleton?
I'm not arguing that the government can't prove drug amounts or drug type. What I'm saying is, on this record, they didn't. For example, when the court directly asked Mr. Olaque about the drug amounts, he said no. When asked kind of indirectly and tangentially, they said Mr. Olaque said he didn't relieve. This testimony about the amounts of by other co-defendants is not in the record in Mr. Olaque's case. It wasn't relied upon specifically by the court. For example, record 243, which is Mr. Clark's response to a pre-sentence report, the government's response to Mr. Clark's pre-sentence report objections, it's not in the record in Mr. Olaque's case. It's not on my docket. I didn't even hear of it until after I filed my initial brief. What we get down to is, did the government prove drug amounts reasonably foreseeable to Mr. Olaque on this record? And I respectfully say they didn't. I'm not saying they can't. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And you were both appointed, were you not? You have the thanks of the court for your very fine efforts, as does the government. So the court will stand in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.